It's a thunderstorm Sunday afternoon.
Are you ready?
Friday.
Get them out by Friday night.
Got that Friday night fever.
Yes, Friday. Woo!
Welcome to First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Friday is for everybody.
Today, Lars puts you in the driver's seat. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Government is the problem.
No topic is off limits.
It looks like the Canadians are here.
866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS.
Thank goodness it's Friday. Happy Friday.
This is
First Amendment Friday with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I love First Amendment Fridays because they usually include at least a couple of crazy questions. And I thought I'd start with one of those crazy questions today. I know when I say it, you're going to say, Lars, that's insane. Nobody would actually do that. Well, there are Democrats like Attorney General Nick Brown of Washington State just crazy enough to do it. Should the law tell your boss that when the boss knows that ICE is on the way to take a look at the employment records, that your boss is to give an advanced warning to all the illegal aliens who are on the payroll? Now, I know that sounds crazy because it gives your boss one choice. It means he can either be a criminal under state law and say to Nick Brown, pound sand, Nick, I'm not following the law, or he can follow the state law. And then he gets to be a criminal under federal law because he's engaging in obstruction of justice and impeding ICE in doing its job. So in other words, every employer who employs anybody in the state of Washington is given a choice to be a criminal one way or the other. That seems to be the Democrat plan. Let me get into the details of Nick Brown's little plan and the new law that he wants to have. But first, on a First Amendment Friday, the invitation is there. If you want to sound off on something, if you want to contest something I've got to say, well, the phone is right there, 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, my goodness, we love naysayers on this program. For more than a quarter of a century, we've always said and we've always held to the rule. I suppose if we had Donald Trump on doing an interview, I'd have to say the naysayer would have to wait. But other than that, we would always put the naysayer first, always have for decades now, at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Our poll on X today, and boy, is this appropriate today. Should Antifa that go out on the attack face terrorism charges? It has now happened for the first time. President Donald Trump, just a couple of weeks ago, designated Antifa. You know, these jokers who've been running around the streets of American cities since about 2020, the ones that some of those on the left actually say, oh, no, Antifa is just an idea. It's not actually a group funded by hundreds of millions of dollars from billionaires like George Soros. No, it's just a concept or an idea. That's all it is. Well, Donald Trump said it's a domestic terror organization, and I agree with him. Well, the FBI has just announced that has brought terrorism charges against members of Antifa in a July attack. This one happened on the Prairie Land Immigration and Customs Enforcement Facility. That is in the state of Texas. The FBI made the announcement yesterday afternoon. It is the first time in American history that the U.S. Department of Justice has brought terrorism charges against Antifa, and it's about time. 20-plus arrests, and as they announced at the time, no one gets to harm law enforcement, not on my watch. Now, I think that would apply to everybody except the Democrats and the liberals. They seem to want ICE to face attack. They want ICE officers, ICE agents to be doxxed. They want the Antifa folks to be able to publicize the pictures, the names, the home addresses, the names of their family, where their kid goes to school. And as far as I'm concerned, it is about time that the FBI and the DOJ went after Antifa as a domestic terror organization. So, should they face terrorism charges? My answer to that one's an easy one. Yes. You can find the question at Lars Larson Show on X. You can also find it on my website at LarsLarson.com. But let me get back to Nick Brown. Nick Brown is the relatively new Attorney General of the state of Washington. He now wants a law that he says will protect workers from immigration raids. Now, in case you haven't seen this movie before, you should understand the only workers that have to be protected from immigration raids are people who are in the United States illegally. And people in the United States illegally are not allowed to have jobs at all. But if they happen to be working at a workplace and there's an immigration raid, they are the ones that are going to be there. So in other words, the top law enforcement official in the state of Washington, Nick Brown, the AG, now says he wants a special law to protect law-breaking illegal aliens from facing any kind of attention from ICE. It says the proposal, as outlined by Nick Brown, requires businesses to tell employees if ICE is coming to inspect company records in search of employees who are not legally able to work. Do you know, this actually puts the boss in a bad way in a couple of ways, because many of you have complained, and I agree with your complaint, we should go after not just the illegal alien, but those people who knowingly hire them. Because if you knowingly hire an illegal alien, that is a crime. If you hire somebody who comes to apply for a job and they show you a piece of picture ID and they fill out that I-9 form and then they sign the form, they are signing, swearing under penalty of perjury, and that means 5 years in federal prison. The employee signs that form and says, everything I said on this form is true, and if it ain't true, I'm committing a felony and I'm going to prison. So it's the worker who's committing the crime. The employer only gets in trouble if he knowingly hires that illegal alien. Well, can you see the problem with Nick Brown's new proposed law? Not a law yet, although I'm sure the dimwit Democrats in Olympia will probably be happy to turn it into a bill and then vote in favor of this craziness. They're effectively asking every single person who employs people, the minute you go to your employees and say, hey, guys, La Migra is coming, you're admitting that you knew you hired illegal aliens, which is another crime. So you want the boss to simply plead out to committing a crime, or you want him to break federal law and obstruct and impede ICE. Either one, I think, is a terrible job. The Attorney General's office says that workplace raids are increasing under President Trump. No duh. There were no workplace raids to speak of under Joe Biden. And when workplace raids finally happened, what do we find? We found underage children working in places like meatpacking plants. We found kids working in terrible situations. But usually the federal immigration folks at ICE, they tell employers ahead of time, we need to come in and take a look at your I-9 forms. Now, the boss knows what that means. You would think that if the boss never intended to hire illegal aliens, he'd be happy to say, come on in and check them. I think all of my employees are legal. They appeared to be legal when I hired them. And if you find some illegals, I don't want them on the payroll. As one of the spokespeople for Nick Brown says, this bill would give workers the opportunity to get their documentation in order or to make plans with their family if needed. What? You mean go to your documentation and say, hey, I lied under oath. Maybe they won't send me to federal prison. Maybe I can just be deported. Now, you know, there were some workplace raids. A Bellingham roofing company, they came under attention. They came in and found that 56 of the employees at the Mount Baker Roofing had provided false I-9s and gave false information. So the judge signed off on a warrant. 37 people were arrested. Another raid in May had agents arrest 17 workers at a beverage plant in Kent. And now Nick Brown doesn't want to protect you, the average American citizen. He wants to protect the illegal aliens. Anybody among the naysayer crowd that want to agree with that? Because I certainly don't. You're listening to First Amendment Friday on the Radio Northwest.
Favorite color is gold.
I can proudly proclaim that the golden age of America is upon us.
Sit back and enjoy. This is the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right
your body well right. You know you got a right to sit.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
Millions of people are taking to the streets this weekend in the No Kings protests in about 2,000 American cities. They think President Trump behaves like a monarch? Well, let's consider the record. Hundreds of lawsuits filed against Trump in federal courts. He loses many of those in the low-rent district courts, but in the only court that really matters, he has a streak of 19 wins before the United States Supreme Court. Have you ever heard of a king constrained by the law or the courts? Yeah, me neither. If they really wanted to protest a king, why not put that crown on Joe Biden? Biden ordered forgiveness of $500 billion in student debt, lost that one in court. Illegally threw open America's southern border for an invasion of 10 million plus, tried to use OSHA rules to force more than 100 million Americans to take the jab. He bypassed Congress on weapons sales. He pardoned members of his own family for past and present crimes where they should have faced prosecution. He tried to force Americans into battery cars and deny us the choice of our fuels. Biden spent 40% of his presidency on vacation at the beach. Tell me again, which one is or was acting like a king? Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's what First Amendment Fridays are all about. Our question of the day, brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic. No pills, no shots, no surgery, get better fast. Multnomah Medical Clinic. Brian writes in from Bend, Oregon. Hey, Lars, just wanted to drop you a line and let you know I got a call from a friend at Sun River telling me the governor and her cronies just landed in Sun River via helicopter. It blows my mind that we have to pay for outrageous things like that. Sun River is only a two-hour drive from Salem for us little people. Everyone needs to know where our tax dollars are going. Thanks, Lars. You're a rock star. Brian, thanks so much for listening. My favorite post on X today from U.S. ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. ICE has now removed a public safety threat, Alberto Valvodinos Moreno in Salem, who has been twice deported and convicted of aggravated assault with a weapon, aggravated assault, two counts, and felony weapons charges. This is what Donald Trump is scrubbing out of the United States of America. Now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Presented by Oregon City Garage Door.
I want to get this to this Daily Grill to Travel Oregon. It is a state agency funded with taxpayer money from lodging taxes. And what does Willamette Week report? That's the Oregon Journalism Project in particular. David Pendleton, co-owner of America's Hub World Tours, a small tour operator that offers tour guides and buses in Oregon. Nothing wrong with that. He has now been awarded a two-year contract worth up to $200,000 from Travel Oregon to help with promotional groups that the agency brings to the state. Pendleton from Oregon City is one of nine members of the Oregon Tourism Commission who are appointed by the governor and approved by the state Senate to govern Travel Oregon, the state's tourism industry, our agency, as Willamette Week and the Oregon Journalism Project put it. In other words, a public official responsible for holding Travel Oregon accountable just obtained a no-bid six-figure contract from the agency he oversees. Today's best email, but you can always send more to at LarsLarson.com. It's brought to you by Cap Concrete Coatings. Turn your garage, patio, or driveway from ugly and rough to beautiful and tough. I've seen it with my own eyes because I hired them to work for me. Check out CapConcreteCoatings.com or call 855-CAP. That Jana writes, hey, Lars, on the news this morning on KATU, the talking heads and the weather reporter were going gaga about how they were watching Kilauea erupting in the Hawaiian Islands. Funny how all their CO2 worries go out the window when it's a volcano belching CO2 24 hours a day, 7 days a week into the atmosphere. Science is dead in their zombie minds. To your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. Let's start with Todd. Hey, Todd, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Hi, Lars. What's bothering me is Pam Bondi seems to be behind on the prosecution with what's going on with this law they want to pass in Washington. It's illegal to notify somebody of a federal investigation. That's interfering with the federal investigation. We had a person at our work who the feds came and talked to from an old job, and he was notified if he said anything about it to that person, he could be charged. And Pam Bondi should be in court on day one.
Well, hold on, Todd.
Ferguson should
Todd.
Be being charged as a co-conspirator. In
well, hold on.
With
let's get all the names
Ferguson.
Right. Ferguson is the governor.
Yeah.
Nick Brown is the attorney general. And so far, the law he's proposing is still just a proposal. It hasn't been passed.
Seems to wait until everything is too late. Like, I watch these people standing.
Yeah, but hold on. You want Pam Bondi.
Federal officer. They should be facing 10 years.
Todd, you can't go in as the attorney general and take somebody to court over a law that hasn't become a law yet.
No, once it gets passed, I just have a feeling
they
pass this, it'll take 2 years. They'll get it in front of a bad judge in Washington who'll say they can do this. And then they're just going to wait Trump out of the White House with these lower court kings, by the way. You want to have a no kings? Let's have a no kings for all these lower court judges.
I have no problem with that. And by the way, Todd, one of the reasons for my mentioning this crazy idea from Nick Brown right now is because he's proposing it as a law, if it becomes a bill in Olympia and comes up in the next session, I want every single Democrat to be scared to death of voting for it. That's how we stop the law before it even becomes a law, which means Pam Bondi will never have to act on it, because maybe you can get the Democrats to see some sense. But telling employers you have to warn your employees about a federal investigation, you're right. If somebody does that, they should go to jail. Let's go to Trucker Bob. Hey, Trucker Bob, welcome to First Amendment Friday. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars, happy Friday to you. Thanks for having
happy
me on. Just talking about your coworker there about, you know, what's the difference of the deal between a deadbeat dad? I mean, employers, I mean, the state goes after deadbeat parents for back child support. I mean, are we just going to do away with that as well?
Hold on. How's that? How's that? When the state goes to an employer and says, hey, this guy owes child support, we're going to garnish his wages, how is that comparable to going to an employer and going after illegals?
I thought there was something similar to that. They've got to be notified either way, and the state gets involved with that, correct?
Well, if the state goes after your wages and they come to your boss and say, here's an order of garnishment, we're going to take some money out of this guy's paycheck, the employer has to tell the employee, by the way, your wages have been garnished, and that's why you're going to notice your paycheck is smaller. That's required. What's not required is if the feds come to the employer and say, hey, we think you've got illegals working in your crew, the employer should say, thank you, help me find them, I don't want them on my payroll. Instead, Nick Brown wants them to go out and notify all the illegals, hey, immigration is coming after you, run for the hills. And I think Nick Brown is aiding and abetting, and probably, you know, the idea of having Pam Bondi go after somebody, just the idea that he's proposing, just proposing at this point, that employers have an obligation, if he gets his law passed, to tell people about a pending federal investigation. I think maybe Nick Brown needs to be in handcuffs. Maybe he needs to be charged with a crime. Bob, thanks so much. Back in a moment, it's First Amendment Friday, and you're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest.
The Lars Larson Show. Portland. Daily question to all the Dems in our government.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
Now, the one with the brain, Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It is First Amendment Friday, live on the Radio Northwest Network, stretching out to cover Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, and we're glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@larslarson.com. And Bill Mannix joins me now, who's leading the charge to recall Governor Tina Kotek. Bill, welcome.
Thank you, Lars. Good to talk to you again.
It's going to be a tall order to recall a sitting Democrat in a Democrats heavy state like the state of Oregon, but you think you can get it done?
We are really feeling really good about it. Our numbers are gone viral. just for an example, in yesterday's mail, I got over 10,000 signed signatures. So it's really doing really well. I expect we're going to make history.
Total number you need, and what's the deadline?
Total number I need is 293,000. The deadline, I have to turn them in on October 27th at 5 p.m. to the elections office. And, yeah, we're doing
so
well.
You've got what, 10 days to get the signatures in? And how many, you know, how close are you to closing the deal?
I believe that if after we have this rally and after I collect all the other signatures that are out there, they're being mailed to me by the 21st of October, we're going to be well over that mark. We're going to try to make it too big to rig.
Good, because you're going to need that with vote by mail and the Democrats in control of that. And tell my audience about this caravan and where it's going to be going and how they can take part tomorrow.
You bet. As a disabled veteran, one of my goals is to continue to fight for civil rights, and that's what we're doing at this rally. Our rally is tomorrow, the 18th. It begins at 1 p.m. at the state capitol. Speakers begin at 2 p.m. But the fun part about this whole rally is all the different counties have routing maps that they can begin their caravan at to meet up with us at Sportsman Warehouse on Lancaster, Northeast, and Salem, where we're going to convene. We're going to discuss our caravan into the Capitol, and we are going to have help from the state police to be able to circle the Capitol, and then we will be directed to some parking spots.
I mean, Bill, this is one of those things that I hear from people all the time. We should recall this person or that person, the other person. And I usually tell them, number one, it's a tall order. Number two, absent a scandal of some kind, although Tina Kotek has had her share of scandals already, and she's in the middle of one right now, that it's a really tough haul to recall a sitting official of any kind, let alone a sitting Democrat in a state in which essentially every part of government is controlled by the Democrat Party. That's a tough one. How'd you manage to make this one happen, and what do you think are the issues that are driving it?
I woke up one day and discovered or went to our PCP meeting here at the Deschutes County Republican Party, and we met a couple there that had their children taken away because they were fighting what the high school was doing here on the gender ideology, and their teens were going through hormones treatment without their parents knowing, and the parents tried to fight, and Oregon Child Protection Agency took the children away. That's when I said, this is enough. We've got to stop this government here in Oregon from stepping over in the bounds of parents raising their children. And that got enough attention when I started the recall that it started going viral. Jen with ONRI has been really helpful with me. She helped me also with her other website that used to be Timber Unity, and we got the hazard fire map recalled by all of us working together, and now we're all working together to do this.
Can you imagine when you tell people about that fire hazard map that the state of Oregon spent millions of dollars on this map, that the map was completely inaccurate, then they go back and take another swing at it, and it's inaccurate the second time, and it doesn't seem to benefit or serve anyone?
Is it? Not at all. In fact, I'm still paying the price along with 160,000 other Oregonians that got the fire map. Our insurance rates went up. Mine went from $1,300 a year to $6,400 a year. And the insurance rates still have not dropped. So the pain and the harm this has caused is going to be a long time to fix.
Do you imagine that anybody's going to bring up one of my favorite issues the last 2 weeks? And that is that Tina Kotek is sitting on a bill that she clearly intends to sign to have this dramatic rise in taxes, one of the biggest increases in taxes that Oregon has ever seen in its history. But she doesn't want to sign it because the minute she signs it, she knows that a second signature effort is going to begin. They can't start gathering till she signs the bill, but she's running the clock down. It started with 90 days, the day the legislature went sunny die just over 2 weeks ago. But she's burning up all this time because she, somebody who's a member of the Democrat Party, and they're constantly talking about how they want to protect democracy and Donald Trump's a threat to democracy. And she's sitting there saying, but I don't want the people of my state to vote on this tax measure, because she knows to a certainty that the people of the state of Oregon will vote the tax measure down.
Exactly. And that's why at our rally, we're going to be having a captain that's with the No Tax referendum that's coming out will be speaking. We're going to be gathering a lot of information on people that want to sign it. They're already working really hard, along with Congressman Ed Deal and Joni, to get this tax referendum ready to take off so that we can make up for the lost days that Tina Kotek is trying to stall them and cut their numbers down from getting the numbers. And I think they'll be able to get their numbers because there's a big effort out there to be ready to jump and charge full force to get the signatures.
I mean, but isn't that a statement against anybody who claims to be a Democrat or a member of the Democrat Party to say, I'm a Democrat, I believe in democracy, but I don't want people to vote on things? I mean, that's just downright evil as far as I'm concerned.
It is. And that's why I think so many Oregonians are crossing the aisles now to even sign our recall. And they'll probably be signing this referendum as well. People are very angry in Oregon. And I believe all these referendums and this recall petition is uniting the people of Oregon to in a really good way. We're getting the other side of the aisle, both sides of the other side of the aisle, signing our recall petition. We've even taken Democrats on vote.gov at our pop-up sites, and we're switching them from Democrats to Republicans. It's amazing what's going on.
Well, the issues are certainly there because, Bill, Kotek did nothing when Measure 110 legalized hard drugs and caused the deaths of thousands of Oregonians before the legislature finally came to its senses. She did nothing to stand up for the gun rights of America. I understand people aren't going to expect a Democrat governor to do that. But when Measure 114 passed, and is still hung up in the courts, and it just steals away the gun rights that are not just in the Second Amendment, but they're in the state constitution as well. She did nothing about that. Schools are still failing abjectly. Homelessness is a bigger problem. She promised that she would double the amount of housing created in the state, and instead the numbers have dropped in half. I mean, with all that as an indictment of her leadership, on the very issues she said she championed most, she has failed abjectly. I think she deserves to be removed.
I totally agree. And I think we are going to remove her. That's why we're calling this Boots Across Oregon, because we're going to give her the boot. There's so many different things going on. I mean, where is our tax money going? Like the ODOT budget that's currently in place, not the new one that they passed, but the one that's currently in place. Only 13% of that ODOT budget went to ODOT and fixing the roads. The other percentage, the very large percentage, we don't know where it went. It went to DEI programs. It went to nonprofit organizations that Tina Kotek obviously supports. And we don't want that to happen. And you know why we can't control that? Because the governor of Oregon actually appoints those that audit the money from the budgets. Well, that needs to stop. We need to have an independent audit system to audit the taxpayers' money here in Oregon.
Absolutely. And if you have to, hire an outside company to do it. But Bill, thanks very much. That's Bill Mannix, who's leading the charge to recall Governor Tina Kotek. And that big rally is happening tomorrow all the way across the state of Oregon. They're going to get the signatures, and Tina Kotek will be up for recall, even if she won't allow a vote on the big new tax increase.
PHMSA.gov.
Does Lars finally agree with Chuck Schumer?
Of course there's some wasteful spending, but you don't use a meat axe and cut everything.
Pass out the chainsaws and welcome back to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you on First Amendment Friday, live on the Radio Northwest Network. And this segment comes from 540training.com. Concealed carry, home invasion defense, and personal defense. Find them online at 540training.com. And Rick writes in from Oak Harbor, Washington, listening on the Radio Northwest Network. You know, Lars, Greg Gutfeld had it right. If we had a king, you wouldn't be allowed to protest. But apparently people have forgotten about that. So what in the world is going on? It should be interesting to see what happens because you've got all these people protesting against Donald Trump as the king. Every time a naysayer calls this show and says, well, he's acting like a dictator or a king, I said, tell me one thing he's done. Well, you know, and I said, no, what I know is he is a president who has been constrained by the law. In other words, there are things he can't do because there are laws that say he can't do them. So he doesn't do them. And then there are other ones where there are idiots who will go to federal court and say the president isn't allowed to do that. And occasionally the lower federal courts, the ones who've got nothing to lose because they got a permanent job, effectively can't be fired. And so they'll say, yeah, the president is breaking the law. And then it goes to the Supreme Court, and 19 times in the last 10 months, 10 months, 19 wins, the Supreme Court has said, no, those lower courts were wrong. So in other words, would any king or dictator have said, well, I'd like to do that, but, you know, I can't do it because it's against the law, or the courts might overrule me. Kings aren't constrained by that kind of nonsense. On that note, on a First Amendment Friday, let's go to Kathy. Hey, Kathy, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to say thank you for getting the truth out and to give you a little more information about what's happening in the lovely state of Washington. We have a person who's on the King County Council named Sarah Perry, and she put out a Facebook post that there were ICE officers in an Issaquah hotel yep. staying on the second and the fifth floor. That text would have could potentially have caused people to have bodily injury. There yep. were not ICE officers. They were state patrol officers waiting for a training session. But her putting that out put every single person in that hotel unknowingly in danger.
Yes,
and the idea that we have a elected official who is putting people in danger to that degree to bend over to the Nick Browns and some of her other supporters tells you that this state needs to wake up and not vote for somebody that does something like that.
The other test I'd apply to that, Kathy, but it's in aid of your position, is could anybody come up with a legitimate reason to say this is where the ICE officers who are from out of town are staying while they're in our community enforcing the law? And if somebody could come up with a legitimate reason, what would that legitimate reason be? I mean, it'd be one thing. Somebody sent me an email today saying Kamala Harris is coming to the Northwest to promote her book. And I said, okay, there's a legitimate reason to know she's coming in the Northwest, because if people want to stage a protest, conservatives don't tend to get things by marching in the streets and yelling and screaming and holding up signs. But if we wanted to go and show up and see what she had to say, if we wanted to protest or picket the location of her book promotion tour, because I think that's all she's going to get. She's clearly planning to run for president again, and she's clearly going to lose again. But there would be a legitimate reason to know, hey, the governor is speaking at the convention center today, you know, or the mayor is going to be giving a speech to the Rotary Club. You can show up, you can see what he has or she has to say, and then you can make a decision. But could you, if you used your wildest imagination, Kathy, could you think of one good reason to know where are the ICE agents sleeping tonight?
You know, I think that's a very good question. And to be comic about it, maybe the Chamber of Commerce wanting to give them a welcome package because the ICE agents are doing such a good job. But you must remember that in the state of Washington and also in the Deer King County Council, they have hate and bias committees who go around looking for opportunities to show what they believe is hate and bias, which means you don't agree with me.
And that's what it is. Imagine this. Now, I put this up as my favorite post on social media today, but it was posted by ICE. And they said, we just removed this guy from Salem, Oregon, Alberto Valdovinas Moreno. Now, what do we know about this guy? He's illegally in America. He's deported twice, and convicted, not accused, convicted of aggravated assault with a weapon, aggravated assault, two counts, and felony weapons charges. Now, when people say, well, you can't take these poor immigrants and remove them from the community, Donald Trump was right 10 years ago when he said, you know, when these illegals come across, Mexico is not sending its best, and Mexico was the biggest contributor to illegal aliens back then. But when you say, we're removing people from the community who are dangerous and have done bad things, I see nothing wrong with that at all. Kathy, thanks. Javier, what's on your mind?
Hey, Lars, it's a real pleasure talking to you, long-time listener.
Thank you.
20-something years and keep going. Love your show.
Thank you.
The reason I'm calling is because I just want to warn people about this solar panel company.
Yep.
I installed some panels in my house, and they kind of told me there was a government program. They spend a lot of money. They want more people to go into clean energy. So they told me that if I qualify for the program, they give $40,000 right now. And
hold that thought.
The Lars Larson Show. Welcome to First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Friday is for everybody.
Today, Lars puts you in the driver's seat. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Government is the problem.
No topic is off limits.
Hey, looks like the Canadians are here.
Call 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS.
Thank goodness it's Friday. Happy Friday.
This is
First Amendment Friday with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on my favorite day of the week, and that is First Amendment Friday. And I'll get to your phone calls and emails in a bit at 866-HEY-LARS. And any naysayers, we're going to put them right to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. If you thought that there was never going to come a time when people in the official ranks of government, especially those in criminal justice, were going to stand up and object to what most of us see as absolutely outrageous. People who are long-time, multiple-time criminals, convicted, not just accused, and then they just keep on committing crimes, and then the judges just let them out of custody. The most recent example is a guy by the name of Donald Wayne Ronan, of Forks, Washington, who sped away from a Pierce County deputy. And why? Because he'd been arrested 36 times and is a 13 times convicted felon with a history of violating his terms of release. Sheriff Keith Swang joins me now. Sheriff, it's good to have you back on the show.
Thanks for having me.
You got angry enough that your comment was pointed, very pointed, and I'm glad to see it, because you're one of the few people in law enforcement that'll actually say this stuff. This maggot has been arrested 36 times. He's barely spent any time in jail for his crimes, and now he's killed an innocent young woman. I am sorry for the victim and her family. I hope justice finally prevails. Would you mind telling my audience about who this man killed and how he came to be in a position to kill this young woman, and the comments he made to deputies after he was taken into custody?
Yes, this maggot was out released and barely spent any time in jail, as you talked about, after all of his convictions. And he was in the Parkland area in Pierce County, and deputies ran his plate and came back with a felony warrant to try to make a stop on him. And he took off at a high rate of speed, ran through a red light, ran into this young woman, killed her. 20 years old. It's devastating. I can't even imagine what the family's going through right now. I look about it, my children and what it would be like. And then this guy, after they take him into custody, he says it's everybody else's fault but his. It's just so terrible. And that's very, very sad.
Did he really tell your deputies you shouldn't have chased me, or you should have broken off the chase?
Yeah, he told it to the deputies or the WSP, whoever is doing investigating. He said that, yeah, if you wouldn't have chased me, this would have happened, sort of thing. So, yeah, always blaming somebody else, criminals.
You know, Sheriff, it sounds like he wants to go back to that law that the Democrats passed in Olympia some time ago, where they effectively said if the bad guys run, you're not allowed to chase. And that stayed in place for a while. And then finally the legislature saw some sense and they changed it a bit. Not enough, but they changed it a bit. Apparently there are criminals who want to go back to having law enforcement just say, somebody runs away, we're not going to chase them and catch them. We'll just let them go off and commit another crime and maybe we'll catch them that time. Seems to be the approach.
Yeah. Yeah, that too. But also, I mean, they do this because there's no punishment for it, right? I mean, he's a 13-time convicted felon. And he's out on the streets running around. So they hasn't been held accountable. And, you know, They're going to keep doing this until we hold them accountable. They charge him with murder, too. I hope they continue with that when they file the charges officially and take him to trial on it and murder, too. But oftentimes they plead these things down to, like, a vehicular homicide, and they spend very little time in jail for that. So I sure hope prosecuting attorney is solid with this, charges him with murder, too, and all the other crimes that he committed to try to keep this guy locked up in jail and prison for a long time.
Well, Sheriff, I know which end of law enforcement you're in, and I know there are dividing lines. You've got the police, you've got the prosecutors, you've got the courts, and then you've got the corrections agency. And I understand each one has its own role. But why in the world do you think, and I want to know what you think, when you see prosecutors who say, we're going to plead this one out. I understand that we couldn't take every single criminal case to trial, because if we did, the courts would be impossibly clogged. I think maybe 5% of cases end up going to trial. The rest are pled out. But this one seems locked tight and nailed down, that you've got a guy in a car. He is fleeing from police. No question about either of those two facts. And his car smashed into her car. And that accident, or I don't know if you can call it an accident, but it pains me to call it an accident, but he killed her. So why would you ever plead that out instead of saying, no, we're going to have about a 2-day trial? We're going to walk in, we're going to show you the chase camera, we're going to show you the car camera, the body camera, and we're going to show that to the jury, and we're going to have the medical examiner confirm that the young lady was killed by the car crash, and we're going to confirm that we took your client into custody at the crash, and it's going to be locked tight. You're not going to have anything to say. I mean, let your defense attorney stand up and do what he wants in front of the jury, but he's going to jail for a long time. Why would a prosecutor ever give away a locked tight case like that?
Well, I hope they don't. This is the exact case that we need to do. It's a, like you said, it's a cut and dry case. We charge him with murder too, get the conviction. That sets the example to say, if you run from the police, we're going to charge you with murder when you crash into somebody and kill them, not just vehicular homicide or one of these lesser type of crimes. So we need to hold him accountable, and that this needs to be a really serious sentence and whatnot too. I just want to say also, I want everybody to know that I feel terrible about this. Our deputy feels terrible about this. If you can put yourself in his shoes, he's trying to protect the community, and somebody runs from him, kills this beautiful young lady. It's terrible for the deputies. I mean, how are we going to even chase people if we're so worried? I'm worried about this, right? I'm worried about us getting in the pursuit of somebody else losing, some innocent person losing their life. And then I have to make a decision here as the commander, you know, the leader of its agency. What do we do in these cases, right? It's terrible.
I'm a civilian. Never have been law enforcement, not a lawyer or anything else. But, Sheriff, here's my approach to it. There have been cases, and we've talked about on this show, where they've broken off chases, and the bad guy continued to flee long after the chase was over and ended up killing somebody anyway. So you can end up with dead citizens, innocent citizens, either way. And I've always thought that if you send the message, don't run from us because we will stop you. And when we pit you at 60 miles an hour, if you get rattled around inside the, you know, side of your car and end up dead or badly hurt, too bad. But that's what's going to happen. If instead you say, run from us and we won't chase you, I don't think you necessarily save any lives. It's hard to know one way or another because you could lose lives either way, and there are cases where both have happened. So doesn't the approach of we're going to catch you, we're going to stop you, and you're not going to like it, is better because it dissuades people from doing it to begin with?
I believe it is better, but it's also, you have to take consideration, even the suspect, he had two people in his vehicle, and regardless of what they do in their life, at that moment in time, they weren't suspects in anything, or that, you know, about that. His actions there could have killed them also. So those are the responsibilities and the weight we have to, you know, we have to weigh these things when we pursue people. And so this just makes it all the more problematic for us as law enforcement to do these pursuits because of this victims that could get killed. So we have to...
Absolutely. That's Sheriff Keith Swank from Pierce County. Sheriff Swank, thanks for the time. Back in a moment, we'll get to your phone calls and emails, and we'll talk about the No Kings protest this weekend.
Senator John Kennedy with some advice to Schumer and Hakeem.
Chuck and Hakeem need to go to Amazon, buy some testicles, and stand up to the moon wing of their party.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show on my favorite day of the week, First Amendment Friday. I wanted to hear a story, though, and Javier kind of started that story, but I wanted to be able to hear the rest of it. Javier, you said you were persuaded to put some solar panels on your house, and then something bad happened, I have a feeling. Welcome back to the program, and thanks for hanging on.
Yes. You have to excuse me. I'm kind of a little nervous, and if I talk too fast or too much, just stop me anytime.
No worries.
Okay, we got this salesperson from this company come to our house and talk to us about the solar panel. He asked me if I need an interpreter, and I told him yes, because I have a little bit of autism, and just a learning problem that I have. And so, yes, the interpreter wasn't available, so we keep on going. And he told me about this program that the government have. They want more people to go into clean energy. And yeah. He says, but we will find out that you sign until you qualify. So he put a tablet in front of me. He told me we don't use paper anymore. It's just a tablet. So I signed, and he says, hey, congratulations, you qualify. We get $40,000 right now. When you do your taxes, you get $20,000. And I asked him, what's the price on the panels? He says, that was $70,000. Hey, okay, well, that's normal, you know. $10,000. And so we go ahead and put the panels on. Lars, when I got the bill, I got $68,000.
Ouch. So in other words, they sold you the idea that you were going to get $40,000 right now, $20,000 savings on your taxes. The panels were going to cost $70,000, so you're going to owe $10,000, and you have to pay it off, but I imagine the payments would be less than paying your regular utility bill. And then you find out all they did was sell you $70,000 worth of solar panels. And now you're on the hook?
Yes. Yes, sir. He told me, can you pay $250 a month? And I figured $10,000, I can pay that in 5 years.
Yeah.
And, I'll retire in 5 years. I mean, okay, by the time I retire, I'll be done. I'm making good money. I can pay him. Plus, I have a son, he's 27 years old. He has autism too, but he really needs help. There will be one less bill for him when I'm gone.
Man. That's a great way to plan. But tell me this, Javier, are you going to be able to get that contract revoked because they sold it to you under false pretense?
No. I try everything, Lars, and they say, no, nothing I can do. Call the Justice Department. I call the company, and the lady who answers the phone told me, did you record the conversation? And I say, no, you got no proof. I need to talk to a manager. And I called several times until finally I got to talk to a manager, a supervisor. And Hispanic, so no mistake, I understand everything. And I say, hey, what you guys did wasn't right, man. You guys lied to me and everything. And he says, oh, we got you on video that you signed. And I said, our lawyer said we are covered. That's all I got from them. So
And it sounds like what they did was just sell you the solar panels with no federal subsidy, no none of that, which means they're playing off the fact that the government has been popularizing the idea of subsidized solar panels, leading people to believe that somebody might just show up and say, you're getting all this money that'll help you pay for it, and you only have to pay for a fraction of it. In a lot of ways, I think that is the government preparing or priming people for exactly that kind of scam. Javier, I wish I knew a great solution for you. I do not. Now, I want to mention our X poll today, because we put up a brand new poll question. For the first time in American history, the FBI and the DOJ have now charged members of Antifa, this time in Texas, as members of a domestic terror organization with terror charges for an attack that took place in July in Texas. So Dash is on the line. Dash, you wanted to make some comments about Antifa?
Yeah, Antifa is just an idea. You've heard that before, haven't you?
I've heard that from Democrats and liberals for a long time.
Yeah, that's not a real thing. A couple years ago, there was a guy, a conservative guy in Portland that was attacked. I think he was either ambushed or bum-rushed by a liberal. Remember that?
Are you talking about there's a guy named Aaron Danielson who was shot to death by a member of Antifa?
Oh, wow.
And that member from the federal marshals and got shot to death himself.
No, this guy was beat up by some other guy, and he ran into a bar there in Portland, Southeast Portland, that was an Antifa-friendly bar. They even advertised with a sign in the window that says, "We are Antifa-friendly." Remember? I don't know if you remember that.
I don't
Maybe
remember that one, but it doesn't surprise me one little bit. What was that, the point you wanted to make?
That was exactly it. That Antifa isn't an idea; it's a real thing. I have personal connection to them, and I know it's a real thing. And that incident comes to mind. Maybe I'm thinking of something else. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be, but the fact is, they are now a designated domestic terrorism organization, and now some of their members have been charged. Let's go to John. Hey, John, you heard me talking about police chases and whether or not the police should break off and tell the bad guys, just run, and we'll be able to get away. What was your take?
Well, first of all, I want to say I hope those Antifa guys are being held without bail.
Hope so, too.
Anyways, you know, it's kind of obsolete because, you know, we have drones and you can have an EMP package on them that would blow every circuit in that car.
Assuming it's a newer car, yeah. And that's assuming the cops have drones and some agencies have them and some do not. And whether or not they have electronic countermeasures like the military, I don't think so.
If they stop paying for illegal alien Medicare and Medicaid, but they could probably afford to buy one for every police agency in the country.
They do have an
EMP package that did attach to police cars, but they had to drive up to them and touch the wand or the antenna, and they would stop any car, either old or new.
Well, heck, forget about the high tech solution. Have you seen the grappler? I know it sounds like something out of a cartoon. The grappler is a device that a lot of police agencies are going for. And what they do is they go up and it shoots out a piece of nylon webbing that wraps around one of the rear tires of the car and brings cars to a halt very quickly. There are other devices that quickly flatten the tires of cars that are, where people are running away.
Yeah, I've seen that, but the drone would be quick and clean.
Go ahead.
Well, I said if it lands, because they can even land drones on moving vehicles now. I thought that was
neat. John, what you're talking about is a cop starts chasing somebody. You would have to launch a drone from somewhere not too far away. I mean, drones are pretty fast and they do fly line of sight. But imagine trying to get 911 to vector a drone in so they could end up above the chase car and then do all that. I think the real question here is, should we tell the bad guys, if you run, the police won't chase, thinking that that will save lives, although I don't agree. I think it'll still cost lives. Or should you tell the bad guys, you're going to be chased down, you're going to be stopped, and if you get hurt or killed in the process, too bad. You got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. Tim Walz, proving fashion really is political.
Think of how easy it would be to be a damn Republican. What should I wear today? This stupid freaking red hat.
Now, with his red hat, here's Lars Larson. Red.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. And for the life of me, I can't remember another time when an American president, in the middle of a shutdown, we've had about 20 shutdowns, has said, well, why don't we figure out a way to use money that's already appropriated and already available to make sure that at least the military gets its paychecks? I thought that's a brilliant idea. Now, maybe it's happened before, and I imagine Jim Whaley would know that. Jim is CEO of Mission Roll Call and a retired U.S. Army lieutenant colonel. Colonel, welcome to the program.
Lars, thanks for having me.
And by the way, thanks for your service. Thank you.
Thank you. It was an honor.
Is there another time where an American president just said, we've already got money that is appropriated, why don't we take some of that and use it to pay the troops?
No, it's first that I know of, and I did a little check prior to this call, and I haven't been able to find that. So, you know, hats off to the president and the administration to find a way in the chaos that is enveloping a whole lot of veterans and their families to make sure they get paid, and the Coast Guard, because remember, they had to do two different approaches, one for the Coast Guard, which falls under Homeland Security, and then active duty, of course, which is under the Department of War.
Well, in fact, it might play double duty, because there's already appropriated money that was being used for, say, DEI or some other ridiculous woke activity. You could say, let's just drain those accounts down and make sure everybody gets their checks, and then the money won't be there anymore. But is this legal? Is there any way to determine at this point, since it's never happened before, whether it's legal or not? And I'm hoping that it will be.
I don't know. I'm certainly not a legal expert. I do know from what I've read, and I'm sure you and your learned audience has attained from newspapers and such, that it's only temporary. So, of course, the shutdown needs to end. And every time Washington shuts down, veterans and service members are made collateral damage in these political fights. You know, disruptions to pay and benefits immediately hit families and mission readiness, really. And so when you think about it, you know, veterans in active duty still need to go to work. There's 1.3 million active duty troops and their families, and now they face uncertainty around pay. And now they're worried about paying bills, paying child care, getting groceries, putting gas in the tank, all while continuing to show up for duty as they raise their right hand to do that. But the American government, our government, needs to do better.
Well, I'll tell you, if I have a personal dog in the fight at all, it's because my dad did 20 years, and so he got a pension. I think in the mid-80s, the pension was all of, $350 a month. It wasn't much, but I mean, you know, compared to the time he served, between 40 and 60. So I understand this would have an effect. If you're that veteran expecting to get that that retirement check and it doesn't come, even if you know it's coming in a couple of weeks. And then the question I've been asking everybody who's got any connection to this issue is, the longest ever U.S. government shutdown was 35 days. We're now at about 17 or 18 days, depending on how you count them. So do we have two more weeks with this? Or are the Democrats, have the Democrats not damaged themselves enough yet by causing this shutdown? And bravo to Mike Johnson for figuring out a way to say, here's the clean bill. You want to vote it down, then you own it. You broke it, you own it. And the Democrats are trying desperately to say, no, this is their fault, even though it seems to be clear even to the public. This is the Democrats' call. They can end it when they want to. They're the ones who are choosing to continue it. They get to own it.
Yeah, I think everyone can agree that veterans and active duty military deserve a government that plans ahead, ensures consistent funding, and doesn't leave them exposed to this political brinkmanship.
So what do we do at this point? I mean, and what's the way in which average Americans could actually encourage the Democrats to bring it to an end?
Well, what we do at Mission Roll Call, as you know, Lars, is we amplify the voices of American veterans, and that includes their family members, dependents, the entire family. In our country, we have 18 million veterans. So when you think about significant others, dependents, all of that, you're probably talking 30-plus million people. That's a sizable voter block. And so what we do is through our polling, which I would urge all your guests to go to missionrollcall.org and check it out. You can take our current polls, and we share that with Congress. And you know what? We can break it down by our congressional district, and we've made significant strides in making sure that those that were opposed to something now see that veterans feel completely opposite, and now they have a better way to make their decision. And so we think that's important. You know, veterans only make up 1% of our country, but it's a sizable voting bloc, and they've served their country, and we need to make sure that they receive the benefits that they deserve and they get taken care of. I mean, right now, when you think about veterans, there's 1 in 5 are on have food insecurity issues. Yep. And about 25% of active duty have food security issues. So just take away this situation where they're not going to be getting paid at some point. They're already struggling because the pay is not that good. So we have to do better. And you know, I could go on and on when we talk about homelessness and how this affects, you know, our continuing numbers and suicide. It really is a sad situation, and it's so frustrating.
Well, I know, Jim, that you've got to stay away from political issues because I'm not a 501c3, but Mission Roll Call is a tax-exempt nonprofit, and so I appreciate that. So I try to stay away from dragging people into political conversations. But there's I'll engage in them all day long because I'm not constrained by that. But it kills me when I see the Democrats saying, we've got to get illegal aliens covered for medical insurance, at the same time that I think the Democrats have routinely failed, and conservatives to some extent have too. The VA was a mess for a long, long time, and I think Trump is finally getting it straightened around. He did some of that in the first term, and then Joe Biden undid a bunch of that. I get this feeling that people on the left, they'll say all the right things about veterans, but they really don't hold the military in high regard.
Well, if that's the case, that's a very, very dismal view of their outlook of our great nation. I mean, veterans make up the fabric of our nation. They come from all walks of life. They serve with pride and dignity, and they risk their lives doing so. So not to hold those that have raised their right hand and signed a blank check for this country, despite all the challenges, is really a sad situation. You know, the fact is that veterans go on and serve their country. They go into business afterwards. They continue to serve in a community at a much higher rate than the average American, being coaches and serving on boards and running for elected office, which I hope they do more of. If that is the case, then I would suggest they spend a little bit more time with the veteran community and go to a military base and see the pride and the passion that are in those young faces when they're wearing the uniform.
Hey, Colonel Whaley, before we break, tell my audience how they can help out Mission Roll Call, if you would.
Sure. Mission Roll Call, you can go to our website, missionrollcall.org. You can look at the polls. You can get information, share it with a veteran. There's a donation button on that as well. And just share it with the veteran community. We're growing. We're reaching about 7 million veterans right now through all of our platforms, including podcasts, YouTube videos, and all the social media platforms. And we're an organization that I think is changing the trajectory of how veterans are becoming more and more influential.
Absolutely. Colonel, thank you very much. That's retired U.S. Army Colonel, Lieutenant Colonel Jim Whaley. Colonel Whaley, thanks for the time. Back in a moment. I'll get to your phone calls and emails. It's First Amendment Friday, and you're listening to The Lars Larson Show.
Go to the head of the line at the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I'm going to ask producer Joel to pull up that soundbite of Rachelle Chase Miller. Now, who is she? Well, really nobody. She's a member of the school board in Portland. She testified to the Portland City Council because the city council said it's not good enough that Oregon is a sanctuary state. We have to put it into city code. And so she was there to encourage them by making what I consider to be an absolutely ridiculous comparison of illegal aliens who are illegally present in the United States in violation of laws passed by the United States Congress. Listen to what Rachelle Chase Miller had to say.
In the plight of the immigrant families in our communities, we see echoes of the internment of Japanese Americans, the separation of indigenous children from their families, communities, and cultures, the forced separation of black families during slavery, and the brutality of slave patrols. The persecution of our immigrant neighbors is another horrific chapter in a national story written in the blood and tears of black and brown people.
Hold on. Slave patrols? Does this young lady understand that if you're illegally in the country, you're violating a law that keeps you from becoming a slave? When you come into a country illegally and you're working illicitly, people will definitely take advantage of you, and they have. And America's Congress said, no, we can't do that. If people are going to come in legally, they have to come in legally, meet all the criteria, and show us that they're capable of supporting themselves. We don't want them to become slaves. But then again, she's probably a Democrat. So even though she's a female person of color, she may not know that her party has a really ugly history with slavery over the years. Bad idea to make the comparison. Now, let me go to my first naysayer of the day, and that's JC. Hey, JC, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Yes, Lars. Well, I was going to talk about the goon in the White House, but you talk about illegal aliens. Do you even know? Can you even point out somebody who's illegal in the country?
Can I? Kilmar Abrego, yes, Garcia, human trafficker, and man from Maryland, according to the mainstream cartel media. Is that
according
what you want
to
me
who?
To point out? Is do you need more than one?
According to who?
According to his attorney. Do you want me to answer your question or not? I will if you want. Otherwise, I'll say goodbye. Tell you what, I'll just answer JC's question. According to whom? Kilmar Abrego Garcia's attorney went to the court and said, my client is going to claim refugee status because returning him to his home country of El Salvador, where he's a citizen, would put his life at risk. So, according to Kilmar Abrego Garcia's own attorney in federal court, Kilmar Abrego Garcia is illegally in the United States. JC, sorry I couldn't help you more than that. Let's go to Lisa. Hey, Lisa, welcome to First Amendment Friday.
Hi, Lars. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
Boy, that caller really annoyed me. So now I was like, oh, what was I going to say? What I wanted to ask you about is just a code of ethics and conduct for our people, for our representatives that we elect to the Senate and the House. You know, I don't see ever anyone saying outside of our president who has said, you know, it's an honor to be president, but that it's an honor to be a representative. Obviously, J.D. Vance, and I've heard some of them, but in the Democratic world, on the Democrat side, I do not ever hear anyone from them saying it's an honor for me to serve the American people, and actually mean serve the American people, not serve themselves. And I'm personally very frustrated with the lack of ethical conduct, both in our national leaders as well as in our Oregon state legislature. Yep. I mean, I look at even our mayor, or not our mayor, our Tina Kotek saying we're this and that, you know, and going directly against the president. There's no honor. There's no decorum. There's just libel and slander, and it's so frustrating. And for me, as a voter, I feel like our nation has lost its mind. It needs reform and understanding that representing the people is an honor. And they need to represent the people, not themselves. It's actually so frustrating. And anyways, I don't know if you can speak to...
No, I
you know,
can.
In the private sector,
I mean, the House of Reps does have a code of ethics. It's kind of generic. And I think the Oregon legislature and the Washington legislature have the same. Do I think that some of these people behave disreputably? Yeah, I do. And I try to point it out on a daily basis. Like today, when you've got the young lady who was on the school board, whose soundbite we just ran, who suggested that enforcing federal immigration law is akin to slave patrols or locking up the Japanese Americans during World War II. I mean, do I think that honors Americans? Absolutely not. But the best solution for that is not an ethics complaint, it's an election. Because those people have to stand for election every 2 years. And believe me, they do care a lot about their own survival politically. And generally, if they do things that are completely foolish and stupid, and the Democrats do all the time, sometimes the Republicans do too, then they know they're going to have to answer the voters. And voters are the best answer. Does that help you at all?
Yes, Well, yes and no. I mean, literally, when we see the stuff with, like, just take, for instance, the January 6th insurrection, that supposed insurrection, because we know really now that it's not insurrection. But you had people coming out and literally rebelling against the law of the land and encouraging things that in any other time and season would be considered complete insanity. I just don't understand there's like no decorum. There's no actual plumb line of truth and ethical behavior and things that...
The Lars Larson Show. To First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Friday is for everybody.
Today, Lars puts you in the driver's seat. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Government is the problem.
No topic is off limits.
It looks like the Canadians are here.
Call 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS.
Thank goodness it's Friday. Happy Friday.
This is
First Amendment Friday with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. One of the things I always tell younger people within our family is they'll say, but I'm a safe driver. I said, yeah, you may be a safe driver, but oftentimes the person who ends up killing you, they're the ones who make the mistakes. They're the ones who do the bad things. You can be the safest driver in the world, and you can still fall victim to somebody who's not a safe driver. Now, that especially applies, I would think, to the men and women who drive big rigs, 18-wheelers, down the roads of America. I mean, trucks can weigh upwards of 100,000 pounds, routinely weigh 80,000 pounds. So, in America, there's a special license called a commercial driver's license, held by about 700,000 or 800,000 people in America. And it has higher standards than a regular driver's license does anywhere else in America. Now, they may be issued at the state level, and they are, but they are, in fact, a federal license. And it's a lot easier to lose your CDL than it is to lose your conventional driver's license. Knowing all of that, what would you make when a state decides to issue a commercial driver's license to somebody who is illegally in the United States, and then that person tries a radical U-turn with a CDL, an 18-wheeler while driving with that CDL. And because of his idiotic decision to try to do a U-turn on a freeway involving a big rig, that three people end up dead. I think that you'd want to hold the people who issued that license responsible. And Carlene Johnson, who's a staff reporter at the Center Square, has written about exactly that kind of situation. Carlene, welcome back to the program.
Yeah, hi, Lars. Yeah, scary to think about folks out there with CDLs that shouldn't have them, maybe can't read English, maybe even obtained them fraudulently. But there's a bunch of them out there. And the case you were just talking about is that I'm sure many of your listeners are very familiar with what happened in Florida a couple of months ago with that illegal immigrant semi-truck driver, Harjinder Singh, who made that U-turn in the middle of the street, blocked everything, middle of the highway, and killed those three innocent people. And turns out that he got that license here in the state of Washington. He also obtained another one in California. So we've got some federal scrutiny on us here in the state to ensure that we stop doing this. But I'm not getting all the answers that I expect to get from the Department of Licensing or State Patrol to my inquiries, which I started about a month ago. Finally got some answers to put an article together up on the Center Square this week. But there are a lot of questions still out there.
Are you getting any sense of a mea culpa from these people who issued the license, saying, oh, yeah, we understand, we really goofed when we gave this special license to somebody who wasn't even supposed to be on the roads in America?
No, and there's no explanation as to how that happened, because I know you've talked about this. You know, there's groups that are, you know, providing these CDLs to illegal immigrant truck drivers where they don't actually even go through DOL, right? It's fraudulently obtained. That's bad, right? That's really bad. But it's even worse when you've got the state agency, you know, responsible for these, you know, giving these out. So they haven't explained who did it, where it happened, and if there's someone held responsible. All they say now is they're no longer the Department of Licensing here in Washington no longer providing these for non-domicile CDLs. But they're also not conducting checks, Lars, to find out if the guys that are out there currently holding them, you know, should have been given a CDL. We're not checking.
Well, and I'll tell you what, Carlene, let me throw this argument at you. You've got all these states, and Washington State, which issued this license, has vote by mail. And they tell you with great confidence, yes, we know that illegal aliens get driver's licenses, but we make sure they don't vote. Well, how do you do that? Well, you must be able to tell the difference between the citizens who have driver's licenses and get automatically registered to vote and the non-citizens who are not supposed to get registered to vote. You, the state, have a mechanism for figuring out which one is which. If you can apply that, and I don't think they do, but they claim they do, you can apply that to make sure that non-citizens don't get signed up to vote. Could you apply it to make sure that non-citizens do not get signed up for a CDL? Because you can't say we do one of them very effectively, but we're not capable of doing the other.
Yeah, no, really good point. And think about this, though. The states like Oklahoma and Kentucky that have been doing some of these, you know, basically everybody's coming through the truck stop today. Everybody's license is getting checked as part of a regular inspection. And how many? It was like 900 of them or something. Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's absurd. So we know that if they stop these guys and check them, they know what it's going to reveal. That's why they don't want to do it. And what frustrated me in trying to turn this story is State Patrol seemed to pass the buck back to DOL. DOL so checked with State Patrol, and we can't get any straight answers. And why we can't just do an enforcement over a 48-hour period, say every truck on, you know, Interstate 5, Interstate 405, wherever you're traveling across the state, you're going to stop, get your license checked, get your truck inspected, and yank these guys off the road. They won't do it because they know what it's going to reveal.
Well, and what's funny is, Carlene, I would like them to have no advance notice and just say, this weekend we're going to do this. And what would it take? You put out signs, you know, the same reader board signs they use all the time on the highways, say all trucks stop today at this way station. Roll them in, check the license, send them on. And then the ones that come up who can't speak English, the ones who don't have a valid CDL, the ones who are in violation in some other way, they get pulled to the side. That's not rocket science, is it?
No, it isn't, and that makes even more sense because why tip them off? Yeah, you know, just get it done because I think they're afraid that it will reveal, as some of these other states have found that have been doing this, that there are a bunch of these guys out on the road that are illegal immigrants that and maybe even, you know, didn't even get their license from DOL but otherwise got fraudulently obtained them. So I think they're afraid of what the results will be.
And by the way, Carlene, I'm aware I'm not allowed to have two driver's licenses in two different states, right? And I mean, most people are generally, and that if you have one, when you get the other one, a lot of times states will say, surrender the old one or we'll punch a hole in it or whatever. So this guy had two CDLs, one from California, one from Washington State, at the point where he ended up ending the lives of three people. How hard would it be for the states to say, here's our list of CDL issued licenses in our state? And then have a computer take about 10 nanoseconds to match them up and say, these 10,000 appear to be the same person. You know, same name, same DOB, maybe same similar addresses. You should give them these another check. And maybe out of the 10,000, you only find 4,000 or 5,000 that are in fact the same person holding two licenses. At which point that person is breaking the law already and should get a visit from wherever they happen to be. They should get pulled over and said, you know, you're already breaking the law by having two licenses. Now we want to check you out even further, and you could clean those rolls up very, very quickly. You got to read her story. It's on thecentersquare.com. She is staff reporter Carlene Johnson. Carlene, it's always a pleasure. In a moment, I got a few fun things to share with you. Weird things happening all over America. But one smart guy in Maine decided he wanted to show his school board why he was so concerned about transgender in the locker room.
Hey.
exercising the right to free speech every day. This is the Lars Larson Show.
What about what happened in Virginia with that boy that raped a young girl in a bathroom, then got sent to another school and did it again? What are we going to do when that happens here?
Yeah, that's a parent by the name of Nick Blanchard. This happened in Augusta, Maine, in the state capital of the state of Maine. And I think this guy was absolutely drop-dead brilliant. It was a very, very simple way of getting the point across. When he went to his local school board meeting in the town of Augusta, Maine, and he said, look, I'm here to protest the school's policies of allowing so-called trans to undress in whatever locker room they want. And why did he do that? Well, the obvious reason that we've talked about a number of times on this show is that young ladies who are going to school, public school K through 12, who go down to the locker room and they're going to put on either gear to go out and play sports. And then when they're done, come back in, take that gear off, shower, and change back into their street clothes, a routine thing for most students, except it's become a really, really terrible thing they have to encounter every time. And that is when you've got woke folks running your local school district and they say, well, trans women or trans girls are allowed to use the same locker room. What they mean is biological males, boys who are pretending to be girls, may call themselves by a girl's name or whatever. What I was taken by, and you can't see this because this is radio, but I watched the video of what Nick Blanchard did at that school board meeting in Augusta, Maine. What he did was two women came with him to the school board. They didn't step up to the microphone to speak like he did. What they did was they stood in front of the school board members and they began to take their clothes off. Now, you know, for those of you who have a prurient point of view, they were wearing sports bras and underwear and all that, but they disrobed to some extent. And the school board was just shocked. You can't do that in the school board meeting. Yeah, that's the point he was making, is that those people on the school board were horrified that these women might take their, you know, hoodie or sweater off and their bra is showing. My goodness, what do you expect us to do? Now, take a listen to what Nick Blanchard told them then, because he really made his point.
Point of order. We've asked that we use...
Oh, so wait. They're covered. You feel uncomfortable? Because that's what these young girls feel like when a boy walks into the locker room and starts unchanging in front of them. Yeah, you feel uncomfortable, right? Feel uncomfortable, huh? That's what these young girls feel like every time a young boy changes in front of them. You can look at me like that all you want. That's exactly how they feel. And you, Miss Murphy, oh, well, I don't know if I stand with girls or if I stand with my, you know, with the... See, you don't care how young girls feel? You don't care about the safety of young kids?
Yeah, and that point got across big time. And I can tell you this, the lady he was referring to, and he said, you can look at me like that. She was looking at him like, how dare you do this kind of thing in front of us? Well, I thought that was exactly the point. Now, at the end of the day, I think that if this happened in every single school board meeting in America, if you had parents walk in and stage that same kind of thing, something that is not going to be that offensive. These ladies got down to their underwear, but that's it. But imagine the reaction of the school board. I mean, the same kind of reaction that we saw when there were parents who would show up to object to some of the crazy stuff that was being forced on their kids in the way of school lessons and say, hey, you want to hear what the teacher assigned as reading for my daughter? And they'd start to read it out loud, and the school board members are saying, the gavel would start to bang, and they'd say, you can't read those words. You know, not even if it didn't include swear words. It was the kind of really, really pornographic rhetoric that was in these school lessons. And unless the school board members are actually exposed to this, and again, this is the kind of civil disobedience. Did he break any laws? No. He simply had some people with him who made the point that if somebody even begins disrobing in front of a school board, that the school board is horrified. And then you say, now, what if you weren't an adult school board member? What if you were a 12 or 13-year-old girl in the locker room and some guy walks in who's 14 or 15 years old and begins taking not most of his clothes, but all of his clothes off? What are you going to do? Glad to get you your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. I have a feeling a lot of people want to talk about this ridiculous shutdown, and one of them is Gordon. Hey, Gordon, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
I think you're taking a arm's length approach to the shutdown of the government.
How am I taking arm's length? We've talked about it almost every day for the last 2 weeks that it's been going on, and I've said the Democrats need to bring this shutdown to an end. They are the only ones who have the power to do it.
It's not. We are in power.
We are in power. If you're talking about conservatives and Republicans, you don't sound like one of the Republicans. But yes, do the Republicans have a majority in the House? Yes, they do, and they passed the government funding bill. Then they sent it to the Senate, where Republicans have a majority, but a thin one. And all the Republicans voted to continue funding the government. A couple of Democrats voted, and a couple of independents voted to continue running the government. And every other Democrat voted, every other Democrat voted no, and that left the vote at 55 to 45, which means without five more Democrat votes, there are no more Republican votes. All them voted for it. There was no way to pass the funding bill. So who's in charge of ending this shutdown, Gordon?
Oh, thank you for the question. I'm saying everyone's going psycho because this government is shut down. It's a beautiful day. And
who's going psycho, Gordon? The only people I see going psycho are the Democrats because they've said, we will keep the government shut down until you give us insurance, health insurance for illegal aliens and deadbeats who sit on the couch all day long and watch mom's TV set who aren't willing to get a job for 20 hours a week. So who is it you're saying is going psycho?
Everyone, to answer your question, I think there's a zeitgeist of why is the government shut down?
Down because it doesn't have a budget, and if you don't have a budget, you can't spend the money. That's in the Constitution. If you want to spend money in government, the Congress must approve a funding bill. The House has approved it. 55 people in the Senate have approved it. The only other people who can vote yes are Democrats, and they are refusing to vote for it.
Well, then the Republicans should do a better job at getting it.
Do a better job of what, Gordon? They gave the Democrats the same bill the Democrats have voted yes on 13 other times. When you say a better job, what better job are you suggesting?
Like not be in my face like the government shut down every day.
Well, I don't know why it's in your face, but there you go. Charles. It's First Amendment Friday. What's on your mind?
I'm a retired commercial vehicle enforcement officer from Washington State Patrol.
Yes, sir.
And the comment from the young lady a little earlier about stopping all of the trucks on I-5 might be a good idea, but there's absolutely no way that they could do that. Do you know how many trucks go down I-5 every day?
Probably
thousands.
Okay.
And how few commercial vehicle enforcement officers there are.
I'd bring in the state patrol as well. How many could you, if you began saying the first 10 trucks at the top of every hour were pulling over, could you do 10 an hour?
If you had probably four or five people.
Four or five people, do you think you could get the state patrol to give you 40 or 50 people?
One of the problems is that the troopers...
The Lars Larson Show. Broadcasting the sound of freedom. Here's Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. I'll tell you, one of the busiest guys in America right now is Alan Gottlieb, founder of the Second Amendment Foundation, because Second Amendment issues are popping up left and right around this country. And for the most part, my impression is the courts are giving people like me, fans of the Second Amendment, a lot of wins these days, although Alan could tell me if I'm wrong about that. Alan, welcome back.
Hey, it's always great to be with you, Lars.
Is it mostly wins these days? Because Trump's got a great win record before the Supreme Court, but for the most part, he's fighting liberals, and he's not necessarily on Second Amendment rights, although I think he stands in a very solid position on Second Amendment rights.
He does. He is winning. With regard to your statement about mostly we're getting wins, that is really true. there are still some, you know, very blue states and anti-gun judges that refuse to acknowledge Second Amendment rights. So we don't win them all at the lower court levels, but on the appeals, we tend to do very well, and we get more and more cases these days to the Supreme Court than we used to. So eventually we're going to have a really good case of a winning streak.
By the way, tell me about this case involving an 18-year-old and a high school in New Hampshire. What happened?
Yeah, this is interesting. The case is known as Harrington versus Crawford. Jake Harrington was an 18-year-old student at the high school, and a new gun owner, legally owning a firearm and carrying it in the state of New Hampshire. And I guess it all starts, he was on a school bus on the way to a baseball game. He's on a baseball team, and he was mentioning some of the fellow students that he was recently, a few weeks earlier, stopped on a public road by a police officer. And when he rolled down his window, and the police officer wanted to see the registration of the car, and he said, "Well, officer, it's in my glove box, and so is my handgun." The police officer had no problem with that, looked at the registration, everything was fine, the handgun was legal, and the officer let him go. But he talked about how nervous he was, because the first time he was stopped, and he was a new gun owner. And somehow that story got around the school. The administration heard that he was a gun owner and decided one day they were going to search his truck without a warrant and without his permission. He put his parents on the telephone. They wouldn't give permission either. They searched the truck anyway, looked in the glove box, didn't find any gun because he didn't have one on campus. While he carries one in his car a lot, he doesn't ever bring it to school. They had no reason to believe he was ever going to bring it to school, but simply because he was a confirmed gun owner, they illegally searched his vehicle.
And by the way, just for a detail, was it the school employees who searched his vehicle, or did they call police? And would that have changed the situation at all?
Well, it was the school personnel that searched the vehicle, and they made it known this was not a police or legal matter. It was a school matter. And now they've changed their tune, so to speak. We didn't search it. We only viewed it. But, of course, they searched it.
Hold on. What do they mean they only viewed it? If they got into the car and they opened things up, whether it's the center compartment or the glove box, that's a search, right? How do they say that's only viewing it?
Well, because they know they're in trouble and they want to change the dialogue away from search, illegal search to view. It's obviously a Fourth Amendment infringement, you know, trying to impede his Second Amendment rights. The poor kid was intimidated. He was harassed over for 15 minutes or so with the administration. It just wasn't right. It wasn't fair. He legally owns a firearm in a state where he's illegally allowed to carry it. He never, ever brings it to school. There was no intent to ever bring it to school. No one ever claimed he brought it to school. Nobody was threatened by him or the gun. Just because he's a legal gun owner, they decided they were going to search his vehicle on school property.
As those Second Amendment, if you're a Second Amendment fan like me or like you, that suddenly makes you a second-class citizen. The other thing I was curious about, they didn't have you, because you said they'd never had any indication that he had brought the gun. They also didn't have probable cause to believe that the young man had committed a crime, and that's what a judge would have asked for if the judge had been asked, "We'd like a warrant to search this young man's pickup truck." The judge would have had to say, "Well, I need to see probable cause to believe that he's committed a crime." They would need that, wouldn't they?
They would. Their only claim to probable cause is that he legally owned a firearm.
And this, hold on, they knew that only secondhand. Did they even have a single? Because it's one thing to tell a story on a school bus, as the young man did, and I could understand him relating that on a long bus ride. You have all kinds of things you talk about. You say, "Hey, this happened to me, but it worked out well." So it wasn't even I really got angry at a guy, and I told him if he didn't straighten out, I'd bring a gun to school. It wasn't anything like that, but they had no direct knowledge that he even owned a gun, did they?
No, they did not. And again, this happened on the school bus. When he told the story about the police officer stopping him on a public road, and again, no action was taken against him. He just talked about how nervous he was, you know, that this happened. And the fact of the matter is, I don't know if they got it secondhand, third hand, fourth hand. I mean, he got around school that he happened to just legally own a firearm, and because the administration heard that he owned a gun, they decided to illegally search his vehicle.
Well, that's the other thing, Alan. Again, I always tell my audience I'm not a lawyer, but imagine walking into a judge and saying, "Your Honor, we need a search warrant." Based on what? Based on, a telephone tag kind of situation where six people passed a story along and we happened to hear the story. We'd like to use that as our reason to get a warrant. What would a judge have done to them?
Well, I assume any right-minded thinking judge would have said, what? No, I mean, this case, this is going to be a major Fourth Amendment victory protecting Second Amendment rights in court because the school doesn't have a leg to stand on.
So where does it stand right now?
Right now it stands that we are in federal court in the state of New Hampshire. The school administrators have been now served, and now they have to respond.
Okay, but you know what I always wonder about when this stuff happens, Alan? And it doesn't just involve Second Amendment. It involves things like Coach Joe Kennedy, you know, who stood on the 50-yard line and said a prayer at the end of football games on Friday night, and he finally won at the Supreme Court. I keep wondering when some school district is going to say, you know what, this was really stupid. He has our abject apology. We're sorry that we did this to him, and we're sorry that when it was pointed out that we had no legal leg to stand on in searching his vehicle, that we did it anyway, and they offer an apology. Have they done anything like that or even tried?
Not yet. I assume they probably will after they get served with papers to try to get out of the suit, but by then I think it's a bit too late. This kid deserves some financial remuneration for what he had to go through and having his rights violated.
And I'm just wondering why, I mean, even in a state like New Hampshire, it's kind of a liberal state, at least based on the politicians we know about from New Hampshire. You'd think that somebody on the school board would say, this is a loser. We're going to go to court. It's going to cost probably hundreds of thousands of dollars. And at the end, we're going to lose. Why don't we just settle up right now and get out of trouble?
Well, if they're smart, they'll probably offer to do that.
But only after they've dragged it down the road quite a ways, because I can't remember how many millions of dollars that school district wasted on the coach who liked to say a silent prayer on the 50-yard line at the end of a ball game. But it just seems like there'd be somebody sensible, at least one sensible person on every school board that said, what's the cheapest, easiest way that we can put this right and get out of it without spending several hundred thousand dollars of the taxpayers' money? And I would kind of expect that the community that they're in, Hillsboro Deering High School, that the community would say, why are you going to waste money on this when I'll bet their own attorneys are saying, we're going to go to court and we're going to lose on this one. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I'd agree. And again, I'm going to expect them to try to make some settlement offers, but you never know. At any rate, you know, we're Second Amendment Foundation is more than happy to litigate this case because we're going to win and protect a young man's rights.
Well, and I'm glad you are. Alan, thanks very much. You want to tell my audience where to find your organization?
Easy, on the internet at our website at saf.org, or just Google Second Amendment Foundation and our website will pop right up.
Very good. That's Alan Gottlieb, who's founder of the Second Amendment Foundation. Can you imagine if you were sitting on a school board and this case was brought to you by the superintendent or the principal, and he said, hey, we got in trouble for illegally searching somebody's vehicle. Wouldn't you say, let's get out of this one as fast as we possibly can? It's First Amendment Friday. I'll get to your phone calls and emails, and we'll talk about the president dropping an F-bomb today.
Because you like what you hear, right? Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's First Amendment Friday. Your calls are welcome at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Naysayers always go to the head of the line. And this segment of the show is brought to you by Oregon Medical Centers, the regenerative medical specialist, Oregon Medical Centers. And this is the Radio Northwest Network. We endeavor to serve the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on a daily basis. Our ex-poll today: should attacking Antifa face terrorism charges? For the first time in American history, the FBI and the DOJ have announced that terrorism charges have been brought against suspects in a July attack on Immigration and Customs Enforcement. This happened at a facility in Texas. Donald Trump had designated Antifa as a domestic terrorist organization, and now members of the group, for the first time ever, the FBI has arrested Antifa-aligned anarchist violent extremists, and terrorism charges have been brought. Under President Trump's new authority, we've made more than 20 arrests. No one gets to harm law enforcement. Not on my watch, is the comment from Cash Patel at the FBI. Let's go to Jeff. Hey, Jeff, thanks so much for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Well, Americans, parents, you better get ready for your boys and girls to be coming home in body bags from Venezuela.
Why?
Because I've seen this playbook before. I'm 70-plus years old. I've seen it before. This is going to be Vietnam Redux Part Deux. I mean, you send in the CIA first to start up and do covert ops. Next thing is going to be destroying the infrastructure to destabilize the government. After that, you set up a phony U.S.-funded Contra to try and fight as guerrillas. And after that, if all that don't work, we get to have another phonied-up Gulf of Tonkin event where Trump can justify the invasion of Venezuela, and we go in, and Trump gets to distract from Epstein, and the oil boys get to take over Venezuela's oil.
So I always love a good naysayer, but Jeff, do you mind if I ask a few questions, as the lawyers say, in aid of an objection?
Sure, go ahead. I've seen it all before. It's playbook time.
Well, I know you saw it in Vietnam, which was started under Harry Truman, and then accentuated under Eisenhower.
Right, Eisenhower.
No, hold on. Start under Truman. Truman is when the first advisors were sent into Vietnam, and then finally accelerated under Johnson and then Kennedy. So tell me this.
What about Eisenhower? You don't forget Eisenhower.
I mentioned
now.
Eisenhower, but you were yakking, so you couldn't hear me say it. But Eisenhower was in the middle. Truman sent in advisors. More were sent in under Eisenhower, then under Kennedy, and then under Johnson. And then it finally came to an end under a Republican president in 1975. So tell me why a notoriously anti-war president like Trump, who's been trying to end wars, tell me why he would seek to start another war with Venezuela, and what would the issue be?
It's going to be a phony Gulf of Tonkin. The draft dodger coward in chief, who's never ever fought a thing and has never been in a fight in his life, he has no care for the military. It's all about Epstein and hiding Epstein. That's what this is going to be all about, is hiding the Epstein stuff from coming out.
Hold on. He's going to declare war on Venezuela to hide Jeffrey Epstein?
Yes, he is. It's all about the distraction. Keep the American people, keep them distracted. Okay? We already killed 11 people on a boat. They had no evidence, no proof. They blew it up. They could have stopped the boat and taken these people. The Navy
was
there.
Why would we want to stop a boat full of drug dealers, and why not just take them out?
Because you have no proof that they're drug dealers. You had 11 people on a boat. There was no proof because they got blown up. You stop them. You get the proof. You get the drugs.
You don't suppose they had, before that boat ever left the dock, and I would suggest that a big, expensive, go-fast boat loaded up with gasoline and also with drugs is not that hard to spot for the people in Venezuela or other places in South America can watch as they load the boat and then identify it. Jeff, do you mind if I ask you a couple of other questions?
Go ahead.
Do you remember Barack Hussein Obama dropped 2,900 drone missiles during his time in office?
Hello?
I ask you a question. Do you remember when Barack Hussein Obama, the great constitutional scholar, dropped 2,900? See, this is what happens. If you jack, you ask me to repeat the question. Do you remember him doing that?
Yes, I do.
Okay, what proof did he have that the people he was dropping missiles on were bad for America or were, in fact, guilty of anything?
Did I say I agreed with it?
No, I'm asking you, do you remember first? Because I can't ask you if you agreed with it if you don't remember.
I remember it well.
Okay, did you object to that?
Yes.
You did? Okay. I don't remember you calling the show and objecting to it. What would you suggest?
Just because I don't call you up and talk to you doesn't mean I object. What? You're not the bend-all and be-all of my world,
I don't
Lars.
Pretend to be the stand-all and be-all. But tell me this. How do you expect that we would pull over boats in the open ocean that go that fast? Most of our Navy ships don't go that fast. How would you suggest they interdict those boats?
You have helicopters. You have our own fast boats. You can do it. You can try and take out. You got sharpshooters on these things. You can take out the motors.
So you're okay with shooting. It's okay to shoot them with bullets, but it's not okay to shoot them with missiles.
drug boats do not carry 11 people, all right?
They might if they had enough product on board. Oh, gosh, we have got time. Play the Donald Trump soundbite, please.
He has offered everything. He's offered everything. You're right. You know why? Because he doesn't want to around with the United States. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Donald Trump. You're doing a great job. You got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show.